show, the spy grid, the AI robot takeover has been in place for over a decade. And now they're just using it against you, letting you know what they're going to do with it. And it has a lot of good uses, but in the end, it's about an AI takeover, a post-human world. Here's just one of the latest clips. There's dozens of these a day of a man being pulled over in Minnesota. And they think that he's stolen them, and it's just a car reviewer. But that's what the AI said. Here's an example.
Can you come out to me, please?
Here?
Yes. Okay, is this your car?
It's complicated. Can I explain it?
You can explain it, yes.
I review cars for a living. I fly around the world and review cars. I have a different car every single week.
The reason you have four cops here because your license plate is registered as stolen license plates in our system.
Are you serious?
That's why Flock has been reading it, because it's popping up as a stolen plate. Okay.
Got it. So this was picked up somewhere by Flock. The cameras that read my license plate now twice in the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. And it picked up and flagged it for the cops. You guys have been searching for this car. Mm-hmm. Unreal.
So here's the guy that got pulled over. He's absolutely shell-shocked that his plate was identified as stolen by these Flock cameras. And just imagine if the police had swarmed him and there was some kind of altercation and like he died because of an interaction, because of a misidentified Flock camera. So let's just see what the average American has to say about this. This is the comment section. Flock violates the Constitution, which it absolutely does. You have a right to travel and not be stopped and searched if you've done nothing wrong. How is this not a violation of the Fourth Amendment? Of course, it's a Flock camera. Pretty much equivalent to a law enforcement trusting AI to do the work for them. This is exactly what's going on because these do use AI. We are losing our rights. Ban Flock. All right, so everyone agrees that this is wrong. Nobody wants to be tracked. These people do not have a warrant to be tracking you like this. This should be illegal.
Folks, for over 15 years, people brought in hundreds of different big tech devices like Alexa that's listening to you. Now they have cameras that are watching you. Your cell phone's doing it. The smart meter, everything. Now, this is law now in the U.S., law in the EU. In-car cameras are now required in Europe. U.S. isn't far behind. That's thedrive.com, your consumer car report. So here we are. This is what's going on. And for over 15 years, this is in all the new cars. Okay, they're all watching you. They're all sending it back. The Meta glasses are. So you think Flock's bad? Yeah, it's bad because they're starting to use the system. But it's nothing compared to what they've got. Every new car in Europe now spies on your face with a camera and reports back. Here to monitor drivers amid general safety regulation update. Same thing here. All cars sold in the EU now require a camera aimed at your face, and it's listening to you. EU mandates driver-facing cameras. It's the law. And it goes on. And you got people breaking now the news. Oh, my God. The government has all these hidden things and power poles and streetlights. And, yeah, they started putting them in 20 years ago under Homeland Security. Here's our article, March 26, 2012, everything is spying on you from InfoWars. They've taken it down, but the archives are public, and we detail it all. Federally funded streetlights capable of recording conversations, 2011. Smart streetlights track everything we do all the time, 2014. Company admits smart meter lights can analyze voices, track people, 2013. Not just buses, streetlights are also recording conversations. DHS official, you would never know if the streetlights were spying on you. 2011, Big Sis Twitter spy streetlights. Goes on, 360 surveillance, how police use public-private partnerships to spy on Americans. Oh, the Wall Street Journal is telling us about it. All of this is already in place, but now they're rolling out because they have the data centers that aren't just for AI so you can make funny pictures. It's about controlling you. And they've already said at the World Economic Forum, the UN, that, oh, the lockdowns were a psychological test for carbon lockdowns in the future. You're only allowed to use your car 3 days a week, 15-minute cities. It's the same system. Get ready for stay-at-home orders. That's what the plan is all about. This is an admitted plan. The good news is we know the plan, turning the whole world into a giant panopticonic surveillance grid. Our special guest, Roger Avery, straight ahead. Share the live feeds now at Real Hawk Jones and on Rumble. We'll be back.
Fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the alicejonesstore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did.
Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the alexjonesstore.com today.
We're doing man's work here. Fighting for the species as our forebears did. Building. Competing. Striving. Trailblazing. The maverick spirit is alive and well. Reality starts here. Victory starts here. Tyranny dies here. Freedom grows here. You have the power in your hands right now before we cover all this incredible game-changing over-the-horizon information to share the live feeds now at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show live, the coordinates of victory, and Real Alex Jones on X at AJN Live, and more. AlexJonesLive.com, our news site with the feeds, video, audio, article, special reports, government documents, think tank reports, and more.
AlexJonesLive.com, because there is a war on for your mind.
Individual. Roger Avery is our guest. He has written so many of my favorite movies. He has produced and directed so many of my favorite movies. In fact, when he was on 6 months ago, whenever it was, I went and reviewed his IMDb, and I'm like, I love that movie. I love that movie. I love that movie. I love that movie. I play the music from that movie. It's just absolutely crazy what a fan of I am of this guy. And when I saw him on Rogan, I don't normally have time to watch a whole podcast. I watched the whole thing. And then I watched it again a few weeks later. So it's great to have him with us. And I literally click with his understandings. And then I hear him talk about things. And a lot of times it takes me even further. And I learn something, which is always great. He's a Canadian-American film director, screenwriter, and producer, best known for Academy Award-winning collaboration with Quentin Tarantino on the screenplay for Pulp Fiction. It's an incredible film. It never gets old, which earned them the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for what he did. At Avery on X, Avery.com, A-V-A-R-Y. So I didn't talk to him before he came on. I just said, please come on. Last week, we asked. He came on graciously. I kind of want to just, because I got a million questions, see what he thinks, where he wants to go. But I also want to get his view on the world philosophy of the bad guys, because it is vampiric. Yeah. They follow the same rules, just what we're up against. And then just in general, where he sees the world today in Team Humanity versus Team Demon, or however he would quantify that. And then wherever he wants to go, I kind of want, because I'll talk a lot, folks. I perseverate. I'm kind of autistic on that. And when the better a guest is, the more I interrupt, because I want to say, oh, you're right. Make my point like a little kid. But you heard my first questions, and then where do you want to go first? And obviously, I got plenty of things.
First of all, thank you for having me on again, Alex. I love you. I'm a big fan of your show, and when you called up at any day you want me on, I'm here. I was just watching your segment on flock cameras, and it had me thinking about that immediately. I spent some time incarcerated, and when I was when I was in jail, I kind of, you're in a tank, with just like that show Oz, and you've got you're in a cell, and you've got a bunch of other guys in there, and then you've got the panopticon. I heard you use the word panopticon, and there's a guy up there. We called it the bubble. He's up there, and he's looking at a whole bunch of pie slices, basically, that are all cell blocks, and the whole thing about incarceration is that it's like a wine reduction of the real world. You see all the same behaviors, and everything is just becomes very apparent. Race relations become really, really apparent. The way authority handles people becomes really apparent. And one of the things I noticed right away was that there was a huge amount of what they would call business going on. I mean, you follow the politics of prison when you're there, but there's a great amount of allowance of people to kind of conduct their business. And their business is absolutely against the rules. People are passing stuff back and forth between, you know, even when your cell doors are shut and locked, they're using a phishing technique to send stuff back and forth from cell to cell. People are violating the rules constantly, and the authority turns a blind eye to it until they don't want to. And so when I was listening to your thing about flock cameras, it got me thinking, you know, flock cameras are just another way to turn the our free world into a prison planet. And this is, you know, one of the ways to do it is just to watch people constantly. And just because they watch you doesn't mean that they don't allow a certain amount of business to occur. You know, they turn a blind eye because that's how the mechanics of the world work. You have to allow a certain amount of illegal activity, or else, you know, you piss off the true power, which tends to be a criminal element that is truly controlling everything from underneath the veil. And you have to allow them a certain amount of business. And, you know, like one of the things you learn in that environment is that you can't really trust anyone. I mean, people side with groups, and then you learn that the guards are also siding with groups. You know, the various deputies and guards that are looking over you, they just want to go home at the end of the day. They just want to live through the day. And so they turn a blind eye. The white guards are like aligned with the white gangs. The Latino guards are turning a blind eye, and they're aligned with the Latino gangs. And the black guards are aligned with the black gangs. And everybody's just kind of allowing a certain amount of stuff to happen. And whenever there's any kind of crime that happens, like, for instance, when somebody gets whacked, and I saw several people, like, so, you know, one guy got hanged by his celly, you know, another guy got, you know, trounced in the yard. And but none of that ever happens unless there's a kind of consensus occurring and it's allowed to happen. So you have to, like, really, you learn very quickly, you're following the rules of the institution, but you're also following the politics of the various power elements inside of that environment. And if you don't, you get trounced on. And you're either taught a lesson or you're, you know, taken out of the game.
And by the way, you totally nailed it. My dad's really smart and very learned and also street smart. And I remember being a little kid, like 9 years old, and he had books everywhere, and he had a big stack of Zbigniew Brzezinski books. And he goes, as soon as you get big, you want to read these. This guy is kind of the master controller right now for the establishment. And it was the Technotronic era and a couple others. And then as soon as I was like 12, 13, I read them, didn't fully understand it. Read them again when I was like 25. But he says, we control all the gangs and all the criminals. The whole world's like a prison. We have the different racial gangs. The warden controls that. The guards all divide and conquer. And then they allow a certain level of criminality because then they can control the criminal networks and use the black markets to actually use that for muscle and control at every level. And then by controlling the black markets, we also then control all the other markets. And that's full spectrum dominance. My dad was explaining to me as a kid. I still remember there at the kitchen table, him explaining to me on a Saturday afternoon or whatever it was. And then wanting to read those books, you're planting those seeds of wanting to understand it and wanting to be able, because I was already, you could read them good. He's like, you don't want to read comic books. You want to read this. And here's a collection of Julius Caesar's writings back to the Senate. He threw the Battle of Gaul at me. And I literally started reading that. And it's just, it was so addicting. And you just cut right to it there of the naivete. The public needs to get how this works. Please continue.
Well, like I'm a movie guy, right? Like I'm a filmmaker and I love movies. And so I always kind of relate things to the lessons that we can discover by a lot of smart people who are making films. And so there's a very good film called M, directed by Fritz Lang. You know, it was made just prior, you know, to the wars in Europe, World War II. And he's talking about, I mean, in the movie, the actual plot of the movie is there's a pedophile who is snatching children off the street and, you know, raping and killing them. And society is paralyzed by this. They're unable to, society is absolutely unable to catch the guy. It isn't until the criminals, you know, the mob essentially gets together and they're like, hey, this is ruining business. This is ruining our business. And so they utilize their strength as the mob, because the police are completely ineffective. And
exactly. And the elites use the mob. They basically control to do sneaky, underhanded stuff whenever they want.
Are the mob. They are the mob. And the, you know, the cartels are the banks. I mean, at a certain point, they just, you know, take over the bank. They become the bank. And so, you know, when we're talking about these big banks, they're just mob operations. They're extensions of a cartel.
Well, I've never seen Fritz Lang's as him. I've obviously seen some of the others in Metropolis that is so groundbreaking about the technocracy and it being putting a spirit into the machine, which they all tell us is actually the plan. But I'll watch M. Is it the letter M, or how do you spell it? Because I want to pull it up.
It's literally the letter M, and wow. Which stands for murderer. And what's aside from all of this, what's really fantastic about M is, like, for instance, the shot that you're showing right now. It's Fritz Lang's first sound film. Wow. So he had never made a sound movie before this. It was everything was, silent films like Metropolis. And so he's experimenting with sound. And so every single shot in the movie, like these, you know, it's all based on sound and using sound. Like this shot right here that you're showing right now, the backs of people's heads, you can have people talking. The device that they use to catch the criminal, and this shot, which is just a static shot of a balloon in a power line, juxtaposed against a mother saying, "Elsa," it suddenly becomes chilling. So he's doing this kind of thing using, and Peter Lorre, it's his first film.
And we see that ripped off in all the making of It the Clown. They're giving an ode to it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And any good filmmaker stands on the shoulders of many other filmmakers beneath them. And you know, it's like these are, you know, our grandfathers, our great grandfathers of cinema. And we, you know, we kind of carry on these identities as we move forward. In fact, if you watch the films of Kubrick was Stanley Kubrick, 2001, Clockwork Orange. I think he's a magnificent filmmaker. But if you watch his films carefully, you realize, oh, he's a descendant of Fritz Lang. He studied Fritz Lang, and he studied, you know, how Fritz Lang shot a film and assembled a film. And that's part of his vernacular that he's learned, his cinematic vernacular. And so, but anyhow, M is a prime example of, as a sociological study of power. And you know, what power will allow? Power will allow the murderer and the pedophile, and they'll in fact use them, to create a certain amount of chaos. Because as long as those elements are out there, you're focused on them. You're not focused on the what we used to call the 2%, which is now the 0.003%. It's like, but you know, you won't focus on authority if you're focused on the chaos that's occurring around you. If you have someone else that you can point to and say, "Oh, I'm upset with them. I'm upset with my neighbor," or any.
It's divide and conquer. Well, I remember, and in fact, my dad said that too, and it was in the books. He even says we allow the pedophile groups to operate and we even control them. And ask ChatGPT, because I remember which book it was, and I've read almost all his books. Ask ChatGPT, or the only thing it's good for, stuff like that, which Zbigniew Brzezinski book talks about how the elites allow and control and are basically behind all the criminal groups, including human trafficking and pedophiles. Because I think it's in two of his books. And he also wrote stuff before he died in books like, it's easier just to kill a million people now than to brainwash them. Brainwashing doesn't work as well anymore. And then this is the head of the Trilateral Commission, who we later learned the head of the Trilateral Commission was Jeffrey Epstein. I always knew he was a gopher on the board. I didn't realize it for decades. David let him go vote for him as his legate, his stand-in. And that's why he was the Rothschild representative, all that. And then there's all these emails And they're in there talking about divide and conquer. And then I remember in the WikiLeaks, it was a bunch of emails with Hillary talking to the heads of university psychology departments saying we're losing the public. And they come back and say the answer is turn up the divide and conquer, the chaos, the crime and racial division, which we already knew. But there they are saying it. And then Soros gets all the DAs and judges in and they just let people run around and murder. It's all right there.
They're all tools. And, you know, and these tools are becoming refined because now we have these vast, vast data sets that are created by these collection systems, which they're not even asking for permission to put these flock cameras out. They're just popping them. I think you even said that. They're just putting them out there. Actually, I encourage anybody who has a web browser and a laptop or a computer to go check out deflock.org. Because you can see all the locations of the flock cameras that are surrounding you. And I mean, I actually use it to figure out what is my exit path from wherever I am. You know, it's actually a pretty valuable tool. But
ChatGPT is saying between the two ages is the one. So sure, America's role in the technotronic era. There it is.
Between two ages, that's when everything happens, right? That's whenever there's a disruption of some kind.
And that's where we are in the fourth turning right now. So he wrote that in the 70s. Here we are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's all out there. I mean, look, people should be reading these books, and these books are becoming less and less available. I mean, you know, people should be reading Plato's Republic.
Oh.
You know, to understand, you know, I mean, it's the foundation of Western civilization.
And it's all in there, eugenics and keep, and we need to get rid of the poor. And I mean, you read that, it's like, oh my God, we're living this.
Yeah, exactly. But it also has the lesson of why be a good person? Why do an act of good if no one is there to recognize it?
Oh, you're right. And, well, that's what he does is he shows the how to be good and bad. It's just like, here's how things work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that and, of course, Machiavelli's The Prince is another excellent book to, you know, to learn about power and how the world works.
Why can't we get the public? There seems to be a great awakening happening to that they've been lied to, but people still don't get that they can learn these foundational systems. And just for business, even if you were a sociopath and just wanted power, they should know all this. But so many people just act like, oh, that doesn't exist. I don't even want to know that there's basically rules to the game and that basically it's like a 1984 where O'Brien gives him the revolutionary book of how it all works and how they're all doing it and how they are really bad. And in the end he goes, don't you get where the priest of power. And we just wanted to torture you and kill you because we thought you were a cool person and we like to hurt good people.
Yeah.
And he goes, but that doesn't make sense. It's satanic. Let's go to that. So that was the first thing I asked. What makes them want to know how the universe works, how they could empower people, how they could be a real aristocracy that was egalitarian and on top if they are supposedly superior? Why would you then want to purposely screw people up and dumb them down?
Well, I mean, the answer is always control. It always comes down to control. That's what authority and power seeks to do. And your common person, I mean, I mentioned this on Joe Rogan, the Latin phrase, mundus vult decepi, ergo decepiatur, which, you know, literally means the world, mundus, wants to be deceived, you know, vult decepi. Ergo decipiator, therefore it is deceived. So the world wants to be deceived, therefore it is deceived. And the reason it wants to be deceived is because people don't want to believe
exactly
the atrocities that go around that are going around them. They're too busy because they've been pushed to the edge by the mechanisms of power, which are, you know, money and debt. I mean, they say the world is in debt, trillions of dollars, you know, but to who?
Yeah.
Like to what? You know, does it even exist? And the fact is, you know, money and debt and all these are all mental constructs that are designed to imprison us. And
wow.
And so people, because they're pushed to to just struggling to get through their day. I mean, there was a moment in Great Britain, I remember, and the actor Tim Roth was telling me about it that. you know, it doesn't matter what side it is, but in that case, it was, I think the Tories were in power and Labour, you know, was trying to make a play, you know, to get into power. But at the end of the day, the working man only cared about his pint at the end of the day is what mattered to him. He just didn't want to have that little tiny bit of solace and luxury taken away from him. And so it's that kind of fear that something little, something insignificant will be taken away from you, you know, ruin your life.
Exactly. In 1984, it's all about the synthetic gin. Never take away their gin and never take away their lottery tickets.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just keep people. I mean, it's bread and circuses. You were talking about Rome, and it's bread and circuses. That's how you control the population. It's not through luxuries. It's the aspiration of luxury, of course. You know, everybody thinks, I mean, America is built on the idea that any of us can become a billionaire. And I believe that that's true, because I think that there's an infinite amount of money, an infinite amount of love, an infinite amount of all these concepts that are out there. But at the end of the day, you know, people are afraid to have what little they have taken away from them. And so they're kept on the edge of the precipice. And because of this, you're able to control people. And now with the, you know, with the flock cameras and, you know, with AI and the various mechanisms of AI and the people who are in control of these gigantic data sets that are being collected, they're able to dial up and dial down. They can tell, I won't use company names because I don't want to, I don't want to single out any single company, because it's really, everybody is attempting to do this.
Exactly.
But I think we know who the companies are. They can look at these data sets and say, hey, this is a high risk person who is very vocal, who has something that we need, something that can be taken away, and they're at risk of assassination. And because they know that, they're able to dial up or dial down the metrics to allow the assassination or to hold it back. And so they're allowed, you know, they're able to, you know, just by tweaking dials.
Exactly. Without asking, and I'm not going to get into it, but I've told a little bit of this. Without asking, I have the private corporation, the CIA, whoever it is, and then later military, I love people go, oh, you know, the CIA gave me that. They just take over the phone, pop up an image and say, here's this person, here's this thing, or here's what this person is doing. And then one of the times I got in the car to go look, and sure as hell it was true. And I mean, I'm just like, wow. And they're like, well, we'd like to work with you. See, this is the magic power we'll give you. We'll give you the ruby red slippers. I mean, that's how crazy this is. And it's very enticing to actually want to be, you know, given the flying boots like Icarus or whoever.
I have some experience with the agency. And what people don't really realize is that the agency is actually a whole bunch of little fiefdoms that are oftentimes working against each other. They're small groups of people. And so just because you think you're dealing with one aspect of the CIA, you're not dealing
it's all factions. It's on target. Man, this guy knows what he's talking about. Roger Avery, Avery.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Can a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement? There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting that at the, you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic. It's Alex Jones.
Well, Roger Avery's very gracious, but talking to him right now, we only got like 25 minutes left. He's very gracious. I'm going to ask him the next few weeks to come on for like a hour and a half or 2 hour commercial free podcast. So I can please. Because you always know every answer and more because you've seen so much stuff. We were talking about how the system tries to capture you, and you were bringing up John Milius, one of the greatest writers and directors ever, which he wasn't captured, yeah. But I know him a little bit as well, and his daughter, which you're good friends with. So please continue.
During the break, we were talking about the agency and how they creep into your life and how they ingratiate themselves to you. And they start, they use mechanisms to show you these are your vulnerabilities, which is kind of helpful, but it's also a threat. Nothing ever happens in Hollywood or, you know, I mean, and Hollywood is really just a kind of extension of the government. It's a propaganda wing, you know, of the government. And I think so much USAID money was flowing into Hollywood, and that's where the messaging gets kind of channeled into motion pictures and sent out there. But, you know, you exist in any kind of system of power in like Hollywood for long enough, and pretty soon you find that you have a handler and that that you're being handled in certain ways. And as you were mentioning, they will show you, information about you and your life as a kind of like, this is your vulnerability and you got to watch out for this. And if you're aware, you realize that, you know, they're not so subtly telling you, stay in your lane.
Exactly. And after that happened,
just like the real world, they can dial up or dial down your success. And, that's how it works. That's how the system works.
Well, I sure had them turn the knob.
No movie I ever made was not made just like, you know, the hits that I saw happening, you know, behind bars, no movie I ever made, got made without being sanctioned on some level by the authority.
Do you think because of you being a little bit anti-establishment, that's why they threw you in prison?
Well, it's funny. I'm both, it's funny. Establishment people might think that I'm anti-establishment, and anti-establishment people might think that I'm pro-establishment. You know, I consider myself pro-humanity.
Me too.
And pro-human and pro-humans.
I would say you're a maverick. I would say you're a maverick. And the NSA put reports out over a decade ago saying, we're not worried about, I have clips of them saying it, we're not worried about criminals and bad, but we're worried about interesting people.
Yeah, I mean, because I am not afraid of saying what I know and how I know it, because, look, I've been up and I've been down, and, the worst thing that happened to me was maybe simultaneously the best thing that happened to me, because it opened my eyes. I feel like I was asleep before, before it happened. And then you get a front row seat of, this is how the world works. And then shortly after that, once I was released, I found myself I found myself far more aware of how I was being handled and who was handling me. And without going into details on that, it's one of the Hermetic laws. You know, there's like seven laws of Hermes Trismegistus, and one of the Hermetic laws is, once you know the frame that you're in, that there are those above you and there are those beneath you. And where you run into trouble is when you try to exit your frame, when you try to see yourself as going above your position. Once you know your frame, you're then able to move within your frame. And that is what freedom is in this world. And so
knowing your lane
and staying within it. And that is a kind of freedom. And so,
taken deals from the establishment, but I've said, I disagree with a lot of you. You know, it's a diverse group and there's different, as you said, factions. I want stability. I'm pro-human. There's a place in the world for good people. I am opposing you, but I don't want power, and I'm not trying to maneuver above you for power. And then they've got my MO. They know that. And they've done some nasty stuff. They've let bad guys try to kill me and stuff, but that's other subgroups. But at the same time, there's been a lot of stuff I never asked for where absolutely weird favors get done. And then right at the last moment, this hand jerks in and saves me and you don't even know who it is. I mean, it's weird. It's Twilight Zone, folks.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you don't upset the business of authority. If you upset their business, that's the quickest way out of this reality.
The way I would liken it is, it's like an old-fashioned nuclear power plant with thousands of dials and switches. It isn't that I work for the system or you do, and I've talked to some of these people. They see it as there's all these movements in, like, Pokemon cards they've got they're collecting. And so we're independent, we're real, or they're switches on the space shuttle. And so they may need to dial this up to counter that in a Hegelian dialectic or a third, fourth order consequence magnitude political mathematical equation, which is more art than, science. There's a science of the art. And so they leave things out operating, and they curate it how they want to grow it, how they want to influence it. Even though you're not controlled by them, at a certain point, they can try to hijack what you've done and move it at a certain point. So they want a diversity of systems that they control. But more and more, they don't want a diversity. They call that the end of history, and that's one arc of it. But there's other parts of the establishment that say that's too dangerous and that's stagnant, and so they're moving against it. So I think there's a civil war within the factions. There always has been, but can you elaborate on factions?
Well, as you were just talking right now, I thought of Kanye West and how Kanye thought he was a billionaire until someone threw a switch, and then he wasn't. you know, that what he thought he had was as easily taken away as it was given to him. And exactly. So then what you realize is, if that's how you identify yourself is by what they give you, and that's an illusion that can be taken away at any moment. And then you find yourself as someone who serves power. And so what I learned, and was actually, you know, a very close friend of mine who's now deceased, Stephen Bing, who was the producer of Beowulf.
Great movie.
The night before I went into, before I was checked into, before I was incarcerated, the very night before he, you turn yourself in after court. He took me out to dinner and he brought with him, one of his guys. He was a construction guy, before he was a producer. And he had this guy who was sort of like a fixer who had, you know, spent a lot of time in prison over his life. And that guy sat me down. And the first thing he said is like, look, no one is your friend. They may pretend to be your friend. You may think they're your friend, but they are not your friend. They're trying to manipulate and control you. Secondly, be your own man. You know, you may get your ass beaten because of it, but that only happens once. And, just be your own man. And so I took that, and, you know, that was the lesson I took with me into that environment. And I learned very quickly, you know, that, that was actually key to survival, was I am not owned by anyone. And I had grown up watching this TV show, The Prisoner, the Patrick McGoohan show.
I love it.
And I realized as I was in that environment, all these lessons are inside of that TV show, The Prisoner. Patrick McGoohan was famously he was a Catholic, and he was offered to be James Bond after doing the show Secret Agent. And he said, no, I won't do it. And the reason was because he was faithful to his wife. He would not kiss another woman, even on camera, because it wasn't his wife. And this was a value that he had that was who he was. And it was actually part of the character in Secret Agent. And so he turned down that offer to basically become...
he would have been a great James Bond. What an amazing, and of course, I've watched The Prisoner several times, bought it on DVD, watched it again about 20 years ago. I need to watch it again. I got it in my garage and hope those DVDs still work.
The prisoner is in some ways about that, because he's resigning. He's basically, and they want to know, why are you resigning? And he's like, I'm resigning because I am my own man. You know, I am.
And by the way, you probably know the plot better than I. I've forgotten most of it, but they tell you everything. I don't want to give it away, but I guess I am. They tell you everything in the first episode. His memory's been wiped somehow, probably by him, because he knows he was the head, I think, of the agency. So to do that, he's wiping himself and saying, I'm done. He's obviously let them know that. They're not sure it's true. So he keeps saying, who is number one around here? I want to talk to the boss. And they go, you are number two. You've made yourself number two. But he still doesn't get it because his memory's wiped that he's the boss.
You know, in the very, very beginning, he's resigning his position as a secret agent. He goes into his handler, his controller. He throws down his letters of resignation. He resigns. They immediately put X's through his picture on his like little file card, and they drop it into a file folder called resigned, because there's other people who have resigned. And then he goes to his house and he's packing. He's basically run. He's going to go on the run. And this is at the top of every episode. He gets gassed. And then when he wakes up, he's in an apartment exactly like his apartment. And he opens up the blinds, but he's not in London anymore. He's on some weird island somewhere, which is a facsimile of the real world. It's called The Village. And The Village has everything that the real world has. It has a bakery. It has a postal service. It has telephones. It has a hierarchy.
And you wasn't it based on a real village they had in World War II for intelligence operatives?
There was a village in World War II like that. They shot it in a town called Port Marion in
But does my memory fail? Was his memory wiped at the beginning of the show, too, or something?
His memory actually isn't wiped. What they want to know is, why did you resign? And he's like, I'm not going to tell you. And they're demanding it. And he's basically saying, look, I will not be folded, filed, stamped, briefed, debriefed, indexed, or numbered.
That's the famous thing.
Yeah. I'm my own man.
I didn't
and
rewatch
the
it. I
line
can't
that
it.
They tell him all, you know, and they call him number six, which is just six of one, half a dozen of another. That's the joke behind
that's
it.
That's right. You are number six. That's right.
And he's like, and they say, well, who are you? And they're like, I am the new number two. There's always a new number two that comes into the village. And his question is, who is number one? And which is, that's what he wants to know throughout the village is, who is number one? And over the course of the entire show, they're constantly telling him, you are number six. Until the last episode, and I'm about to give it away, but it kind of doesn't give it away. The last episode is highly oblique. But in the very, very last episode, they change the inflection. And they say, instead of saying, you are number six, they say, you are number six. So the reality is, he's number one. And that's the reality of the world, is we are all number one. And that's what authority doesn't want you to know.
Exactly. That,
because, you know, you ask, what is everybody trying to do? And, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they trying to do it? And effectively, what everyone is trying to do, the reason Hollywood is, the reason sacrifices occur, the reason people are all over Hollywood doing sex magic, is because they're all trying to recreate the Temple of Solomon. They're all trying to recreate this this ability to, through manifestation and through magic, to kind of create the artifice that we know.
And that's
the world.
What Israel with the Third Temple wants to do, and that's what the Vatican wants to do. It all goes back.
Yes.
It all goes back to the Tigris Euphrates. It all goes back to Egypt. It all goes back to the mystery schools. And
that's
it's,
right.
It's just everywhere.
And what they don't want you to know is that you are number one. Each one of us has the power to create what our reality is in a single thought. You know, it's everybody's constantly obsessed with sex magic because of, and which works, which you know, the Crowley method. I mean, it does work, but there's other methods. I mean, the surrendering to God and to Jesus is in itself the most purest form of freedom.
Yeah, that's my method, but I've told the story and it's 100% true. And I guess it was pedophilic. Yeah. I didn't think of it myself that way. I thought, wow, these senior girls like me when I'm 13. But I got roped into Aleister Crowley stuff.
Sure.
And I
lived in Hollywood for a long time. I saw things that no human being should see. I recently saw a video of Ricky Schroeder, who's now, looked like he was living out in the desert somewhere in hiding, and basically saying, I am not afraid because I know that I stand with Jesus. And he basically talks about, you know, the tape that he saw that many of us have seen.
Yeah, I was blessed. I mean, I didn't get into it. I mean, they were trying to recruit me, so it was just sex with older girls that were trying to recruit me into it. And then it was like, it happened like with at least three girls that, oh God, I'm so lucky. This girl's got a nice car. She's awesome. She's the best girl in the school. And then as soon as I got out of that a few years later, oh, these hot college girls. And then I was like, my God, it's like in the Lost Boys. They go, is everybody a vampire in this town? And that was Rockwall. Yeah. That was Rockwall, Texas, yeah, outside
and
Dallas.
Yes.
And it was the richest county in Texas then.
Go ahead. Everybody is vampires. And I mean, we are all demons and angels simultaneously. We, you know, it all stems from man's disobedience, which is exactly why my next film is Paradise Lost. I mean, it's a movie that I'm just I finished the script and I'm going into production on it now. And
you're
it's
doing
all,
Paradise Lost. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's partly because, look, I made a choice at one point that, it's much more difficult to make, look, Hollywood is, the bread and butter of Hollywood is revenge and wrath. Like that's what sells, traditionally. It's way more difficult to make, a movie or a TV series about forgiveness. And, you know, Paradise Lost is an examination of man's first disobedience. And I realized at a certain point that, and I'm doing it by, I'm using AI, generative imaging to create the film, just because I can do it at such a minor budget, at such a small budget. I mean, I still have a crew and I still have actors and everything, but because I'm able to bring the budget so far down, I don't have to serve a master. You know, I don't have to serve a studio master with their messaging, which tends to be more often than not serving wrath and revenge.
And I've also followed that much that you have your own AI company, and you're absolutely right. It's like a gun or a tractor or anything. It's what we do with it. They don't want us to do that. That's why they want to control it and give liability protection to the big companies and try to shut down the little ones. What we've already done with AI and the ways we use it is very pro-human, and absolutely what we can do to the old studio system and other systems if we jump on using it now and get ahead of them is just incredible.
And it was really just a camera with costume design and locations and production design built into it. Like, that's one way to look at it. And I look at it as just the latest development in the long history of cinema, which has constantly had revolutions. You know, the very first films were black and white and silent. And at a certain point, sound came along. And in fact, when you look at the earliest of cinema, the Lumiere brothers films, Workers Leaving the Factory, or the train arriving at Siabet Station, these movies, which were just clips, they were just shooting real life. I'm sure that people in theater during those days would look at those films and say, oh, it's slop. You know, who will ever want to go see? Yes, it's interesting to look at, but it's, you know, it's just slop. Let's, you know, it will never match the majesty of theater where we feel the performer and blah, blah, blah. Well, eventually movies evolved from that. And we had silent films, which were, you know, like Metropolis and, you know, Fritz Lang's work that we talked about earlier. These were amazing works of art. And then sound came along and the silent actors were saying, oh, who would ever want sound? You know, when The Jazz Singer was actually the first sound film, who would ever really want sound? It's a cheap trick. We have and the movie Sunset Boulevard, Gloria Swanson has a line where she says, you know, we didn't need sound back then. We had faces.
Well, that reminds me of Krugman saying in the mid 90s, or whatever, the internet will be like the fax machine, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's these people. Well, that's the thing.
So many of the globalists are constantly evolving.
Exactly. Some of the globalists are like 80 years old. So whatever weird ideas they've got about what's happening now, they have no idea what's even going on with young people. I know they have specialists that understand all that, but there's real disconnects in the establishment. I think what you're saying about you are number one, we're all number one, when we realize it, is that the globalists actually aren't in full control unless we give the control over to them.
And that control happens here. That control begins here. You are free or imprisoned here, not the walls around you, because the entire world, this is what I learned when I was released, is that it was just a facsimile of the real world. The real world is as much a prison. It's just the bars are further away. The edge of the, you know, like when people talk about the edge of the universe or the edge of our known existence on the planet, it's all here. And the powers of manifestation and changing the reality are very simple. In fact, in the late 1930s, there was, let me see, what was her name? Helene Hadsell, I think was her name, who developed the SPEC technique. And SPEC is very simple. It's S-P-E-C. It's select it, project it, expect it, collect it. And by using those, by focusing on that, I mean, like a pitcher throwing a ball, you have to visualize that it's going to land in the catcher's mitt. You see the ball there before you throw it. And it's the same idea with SPEC technique. And by using this, you can create anything. I mean, nothing happens instantaneously like magic. You still have to go on the journey, but you're visualizing your way there. And the world is really just, it's electrons, you know, protons.
And that's why they're trying to program
protons
us.
Bouncing into each other. It's a giant TV screen. And where it happens is here in your own brain. You can make the world whatever you want it to be.
And for people that don't understand this, I want you to elaborate on this. I'm sure you'll go somewhere. I'm not saying I know what you're going to say, but I want your view on this. This is my experience. They're programming us with all this failure and we're victims. We don't have power and demoralizing us so that we don't realize that. But also with predictive programming, they're feeding us for what things they want, knowing out of our creativity, we will actually build it. You see the little g, like the first book of the Bible tells us we're not God, but made in the image of God and can be great creators. Look what we've done now, making AI, you know, all this stuff. We really are an incredible species. And if people start understanding they can direct their destiny to a certain degree and not let others direct it, that's what the system's really scared of, having our own dreams, not their dreams.
Yeah, through predictive programming and revelation of the method, they put forward these ideas of reality. And they basically, whenever anybody can even talk to you, when you're with a narcissist, they will put you down. And by putting you down, it's almost like a spell. And if it can affect you. And by when they manifest the word, I mean, when we talk about what is God, it's the word.
God spoke and the light came, and God spoke and the waters were created, and it was good. Yeah.
My son is a linguist, and he was recently informing me on all this stuff, and because he's a genius, and he was telling me, well, the word hallelujah is actually A-I-O-U. It's the syllables put together. It's the vowels put together, and it's a way to effectively that speech and construction of language. Is the word, and that's how power is created. And people use neurolinguistic programming, especially in Hollywood and through movies. Movies are a kind of spell, and you can do a good spell or you can do a bad spell. And you put these ideas out into the universe, and as these through cinema, and as we watch movies, we are affected by these ideas. And people are, a vast majority of the population is very monkey see, monkey do, because they're asleep. And I don't mean that as a kind of slag on
no,
humanity.
You're telling them they're asleep so they can get out of it. Do five more minutes with
people need to wake up. People need to wake up and to realize these things. And so, when you go see a movie and I you think about the various movies that are out there, when Spielberg made Disclosure Day, he's making that as a kind of programmatic message that he's putting out there to cast a spell, to cast an idea. When you see Project Hail Mary, it's a very different kind of whether you like these movies or not. It's irrelevant. Project Hail Mary is a film that's about
I liked it.
What is it?
Stay there.
What does
there.
It mean to self-actualize and self-sacrifice?
We got a hard break. We need five more minutes because you read my mind. I wanted to bring up the Disclosure movie, and I wanted to bring up the Pentagon releasing all the new UFO stuff. I wanted to get your view on that. Five more minutes. We really appreciate you.
Example on InfoWars, one of his most famous statements was saying that tap water is turning the frogs gay and it'll turn you gay too. First off, gay people are awesome. I don't think that's a problem at all. And secondly, if you notice at the end of that video, he advertises water filters.
Now, you remember for decades I exposed how bad the water supply was, and they'd have David Hogg make fun of me and say it was a scam, and so what if the frogs are gay from the chemicals or trans or become hermaphroditic? Well, that's because their populations collapse and they go extinct, dummy.
He advertises water filters. Interesting.
It's the same thing with humans. Our fertility is being crushed. Our cancer rates are off the charts. And it's because of all the garbage in the food, all the garbage in the water, everything that's happening in our environment. And water is what 70% or more of our bodies are made of. It is so important to do this. It is a no-brainer. Go look at our third-party studies. Go look at our third-party testing. And then go out and try to find a comparable system for less money. Listen to this. Normal retail is $139. But for everybody, it's $97.99. That's 30% off. And for VIP, $69.99. That is a steal at that deal. So take your destiny in your hands. Don't let the globalists bomb you with these hundreds and hundreds, in some areas, thousands of chemicals. Don't let them bomb your children with it. Take action. Fund our information warfare operation against the globalists. Get healthier. Win-win. That is what it's all about. But you've got to take action. You've got to take control of your life. I am so proud of this bad boy. The AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Shower Head System. That's the housing. Just screws on in seconds. No plumbers. Beautiful box. Absolute high quality, and a happy little straight frog that you look up at every morning, reminding you that you're not poisoning yourself, your wife, your husband, your children. Secure yours now while supplies last at thealexshowstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.